You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Catherine Wagner. Catherine, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
So, Catherine, I know you're working on a number of things now, and perhaps we'll go over a few of them, but what is happening in your studio right now? What are you kind of juggling or working on at the moment in terms of projects?
Well, juggling is actually a really appropriate term because there's kind of three projects on the front burner, and I'm kind of moving between them all. And one of them that's kind of near and dear to my heart is the new subway for San Francisco, which opens in 2017, and it's the first subway that will move north-south in San Francisco. And I made a series of photographs called the Moscone Site Photographs over 30 years ago of the construction of what is now the Yerba Buena site and has subsequently become the center of the city, the cultural center of the city. And 30 years ago, it was kind of the silent line demarcation where, you know, the city did not exist. And now it's become where SF MoMA is and the whole new cultural center. And so I'm working on these photographs that are kind of like an archaeology in reverse. I photographed the construction site of the Moscone site, and now those photographs are being etched into granite in these 10-foot by 12-foot granite stones that will be embedded in the exact same place of where I originally took them. So when you get on the subway or get off the subway, you'll be walking through these very large-scale construction photographs that are very iconic and kind of look like the notion of future ruins.
Wow, I love that idea. And it's really, you know, that's kind of fascinating that it's at once a it's your art. It's an artwork as well as an archive, a historical document, and a kind of direct conversation with the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting that, you know, here it was like work I did when I was in my early 20s, and now 30 plus years later, I'm kind of living to see this work in this completely other incarnation. And it does. It serves multiple facets in terms of it is a record, but it is also this kind of conceptual comment about notions of change or this idea of archaeology in reverse.
I like that, and I would, you know, it's such an interesting way to approach that because I don't know how that project came about. I suppose it was through a call to artists. And the reason I'm mentioning that is just because I would think they got so many different types of ideas. And it's kind of fascinating what you can do in a location like that. But yours is so reflexive of the actual site. I mean, that's kind of the meaning of what site specific is. Only in your case, there's a timeline there as well.
Right. I mean, I think it really is, you know, it's work that was done in situ and it goes back to that specific site. So I think there's something very poetic about that cycle.
I do too. And when will that open up?
I think, you know, it gets installed in 2017 and probably people will start riding the subway, I think, probably early 2018.
How nice. It's also, you know, I mean, before we go on to other projects, it seems to me particularly exciting to do projects like that because they're as close to permanent as something can be in the art world.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think about stone and like the life expectancy of stone and all of that. So it is pretty interesting that, you know, the whole notion of archival and the whole notion of mortality and the whole notion of time-based and the fact that these, you know, in a way, these are these kind of pictographic images that are now etched in stone and hopefully in perpetuity.
Well, and even if not, it's the kind of material where even if the whole station was destroyed, you know, we'd see your art most likely in those stones. That's one of those mediums that it's almost impossible to destroy.
Exactly. And that was part of my, you know, aside from the fact that this deep, dark granite stone is such a beautiful surface to work on, the way it actually kind of transfers the photographic image is fascinating. It almost appears that it's like part negative and part positive because of the way you etch away the, you laser etch away the shiny part of the granite. And so you're left with this very matte surface and the only shiny parts that remain give you both this kind of dual reading of positive and negative. So there's a very aesthetic, there's a high degree of aesthetics to the way the image actually transfers.
That's interesting because I would think it would be particularly difficult to transfer, especially a photographic image onto granite because it's kind of a sandblasting process, isn't it?
Well, it is not an additive process. It's a reductive process. So you're scraping away areas of the granite to reach a different substrate, which gives you those tonalities of the different colors of granite that are within the stone.
So you also begin getting a range of tones that are slightly different than what was in the image.
It's not a paper surface. So like the highlights and the shadows all get recorded in varying degrees of gray. But the testing that we've done is really quite beautiful. I was astonished at the kind of the acuity and the representation of the image. It's remarkable, actually.
And is that a new process? Because that seems like something that probably wasn't possible 10 years ago to put an image like that or have that kind of engraving process completed.
When you think about monuments, right, and you think about gravestones, I mean, they've been etching into gravestones for, thousands of years. But I think with the new digital technology, that laser etching has become more and more refined. So these are all being, translated through digital files. So a lot of it is the way that laser etching and technology can render on different substrates and different surfaces.
That's fascinating. It's like a new medium is being born almost. That's really fascinating. So let's talk about your other projects. I know there was we could talk about Comme des Garçons first, or the other one we were discussing.
Well, a lot of my work has always I've been an artist who's long been looking at the container of an archive and really thinking about the ways in which why are these things and records and memories and historical facts being collected in these various archives. And I've worked in things as disparate as, a blind library archives or the history of splints, the history of medical splints, or the American classroom. So I'm really kind of, when I use the word archive, I'm casting a wide net. And the most recent archive I've been invited to work on is the Giorgio Morandi Archive at the Museum of Modern Art in Bologna. And they have acquired the Giorgio Morandi studio as part of their holdings of the museum. And they have a program where they've been inviting a lot of contemporary artists to respond to Morandi. And if you think about Morandi, he's often thought of as kind of the godfather of minimalism. There's this kind of austereness and seeming authorless stance to the work that is just, I think, so powerful and so minimal. So they've had Pasada Dean did a project at the Morandi Archives. Rachel White Reed did a project. These are just people whose work I've seen in the last couple of years. But they have a lot of interest, and I think a lot of contemporary artists have become more and more interested in thinking about Morandi and his contributions. So I was there several times. I was living in Rome as a Rome Prize Fellow from the American Academy in Rome, and I was making trips up to Bologna from Rome, and I was struck with how simple the objects that Morandi was painting and how he reused the same objects, and that there was this attempt to make everything as minimal and quiet as possible. But there's a intensity to the way those paintings are, where he's kind of bending space or he's hypnotically getting people to kind of look beyond that surface and kind of thinking of the structure of logic within the way he's making those paintings. And I'm not trying to remake the Morandis. I'm just using Morandi's images as a catalyst for me to make my own work. So I decided that I was going to work with the same objects that Morandi worked with, but that I would only work with the shadows of those. And there was a period of time that our historians write about where they talk about the fantasma or the phantasm of Morandi. And So I'm kind of interested in that idea of the phantasma, and I've been setting up these various kind of very simple, very quiet still lifes and photographing simply the shadows and really kind of playing with this layering of space. But unlike Morandi, when you ask most people, what is the color palette of Morandi, people always think of these kind of muted beiges or muted lavenders, very quiet colors. But if you really look at the paintings, there's always a certain or a very small area where there's a real celebrated color, but it's so kind of obscured by the muted palette around that. So I've kind of decided that I was going to celebrate those colors. So my work is actually very, very colorful, where I'm really kind of playing off those kind of hidden, vibrant colors that are found within his paintings, but that most people wouldn't think about when you think about the totality mm-hmm. of his work. So I gel the filter of the lights that I'm working with so that entire shadow becomes that color. So the body of work is becoming very colorful within a certain palette, unlike Morandi's.
And so how is that presented in the end? That's kind of fascinating. Or maybe I should just ask first, phantasma, which you mentioned, that's such an interesting kind of concept and notion to pursue. What does that mean exactly? I could, you know, in shadows, I relate to that as sort of phantoms, but that's not really what you're talking about, is it?
Well, I'm kind of in some ways, I'm kind of thinking about like the ghost of Morandi, because I'm actually working with the specific objects that he worked with, but I in no way am trying to kind of like, you know, riff on Morandi. I'm simply using kind of the power of Morandi's work as a catalyst to create my own work. And there is, because you're actually working within his studio, the actual studio where he worked and lived, and it's kind of uncanny that, you know, this they've preserved this space of where he lived and worked.
So you are working with all his ghosts around. I mean,
you really are. It's like the ghost of Morandi. There's something that I'm pretty excited about, that on his drawing tables there are these pieces of paper where he traced the various vases and boxes and bottles, and he used those as kind of a map, kind of this kind of cartographic map, to make sure when he was coming back to that painting that things were exactly in their place. But he never changed that piece of paper. So that paper maybe has kind of the history or the markings of maybe 50 or 60 different paintings. So I actually took those pieces of paper off the drawing tables and made photographs of those, and they look like this kind of, like, you know, a beautiful mind, like this cartographic markings that you could look at them from any north, east, south direction, and then there's something really quite magical, and it's really kind of the embodiment of so many Morandi paintings within that one one drawing that was never meant to be looked at as a drawing. It was really like a pragmatic placeholder.
That's fascinating, and it's such a great project to do that kind of project, as you were saying, like Tacita Dean and others did, because it's a fascinating way to kind of recontextualize an artist and make their work, you know, or give a different perspective to it that kind of not only helps the artist, but also is another historical nod that, you know, to him, of course, that helps everyone understand his work a little bit more. What you're saying those drawings is really interesting.
Yeah, and also they don't tend to be squares, like they're like parallelograms, or they're like these ziggurats. So it's interesting that these pieces of paper were not rectangles. They were these odd-shaped pieces of paper. So that was something else that that I saw in the work. And then after I had done that work, the curator told me, oh, yeah, Tacita Dean was also really interested in those papers, and she started filming them with a Super 8 movie camera. So it's interesting that some of us are kind of revisiting similar things, but interpreting them in very different ways.
Fascinating. And lastly, the Comme des Garçons project.
So that is Dover Street Market. I think there's one in New York. There's certainly one in Tokyo. And Rei Kawakubo, who you know, is a very, you know, interesting designer. And I kind of even hate to use the word designer, because I think she's really much more complex than that. I don't think we can
define her. Kind of defines, you know, kind of defies the definition of what a designer is. And there is one in New York as well.
Yeah, and so I don't even like to think of the word fashion designer when I think of her, because I think of her much more as just an artist. And she started looking at my work many years ago, and we collaborated on a project together in Kyoto for the flagship Comme des Garçons store in Kyoto. And she got interested in this body of work I did called 12 Areas of Concern and Crisis, which were these portraits of genetic freezers, of like the archives of genetic science from the Human Genome Project. And they're very portrait-like. There's no people, but there's specimens in these very frozen environments. And she called me up, or her husband called me up and said, you know, Ray wants to work with these genetic freezers as part of her store. And I thought to myself, okay, it would only be somebody like Ray who would respond to those in the context of her own work. So then,
right.
That was in 2007. And then just a few months ago, I got another call that they've acquired the old historic Burberry building in London in the Haymarket district. And Ray wanted to work with a set of work I had done on Frankenstein. And I had made these very large-scale photographs of Frankenstein, I think in around maybe about 10 years ago. And I was really thinking of Mary Shelley's novel and how topical it is today. And so it's so interesting to me to think of how long ago that was written. And I made these very kind of beautiful photographs that kind of show all the human quality of these machines that are wrapped in aluminum foil and have all these like apparent appendages to them. And I made these at the Stanford Linear Accelerator in California at Stanford University. And they're these machines that are used at the facility and it's wrapped in aluminum foil basically to keep the heat in. So it's for very pragmatic reasons. So I made these photographs that now have become, they're like the modern day, they're modern day Frankensteins. And Ray saw those and wanted to use those in the new Dover Street Market in London. So we're just installing now. It's January 2016 and it's March 2016 and it opens March 18th. So in a couple of weeks. And it's five of my large-scale Frankensteins wrapped around the main center column on the first floor.
Wow, that's going to be exciting to see.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And it takes somebody like her to kind of take these out of a museum environment and recontextualize them into this other environment that people go to because they're thinking about fashion. And yet she's worked with artists who I think make the viewers or make the consumers be confronted with something that they are so not expecting in their journey there.
What it makes me think of when I look at all the three projects that you just mentioned is, you know, how well you're doing as an artist, the Rome Prize and you know, designers calling you, artists calling you to produce these kind of things. How did that come about, do you think? Is that sheerly a matter of the last several years of work you've been doing or longer, or have you really stepped up your interest in public work and these kind of exchanges?
Well, I've been working for over 30 years, and I was very much working in the realm of, you know, the museum and the gallery world. And it was actually my first association with working with Ray Kawakubo that made me think about bringing work out into a public sphere, and that you're preaching to the choir when your work is in the museum. And I love museums, and they've had an incredible, powerful impact in my life. But there's also something that happens when people are confronted with whether it's music or literature or visual art in a place that they weren't expecting to have that encounter. And I think that's become interesting to me, and I'm very selective about where I do those kinds of interventions because I think of them in many ways as an intervention.
It's really exciting to talk about this with you. In closing, is there this interview will be out in March of 2016. Is there anywhere you want to point listeners to? And they'll have your website and links to probably projects we discussed within the interview. But some are in London, some are in other places. So is there anywhere in particular you want to point people to in terms of seeing some of the things that we've mentioned?
If you're coming to the Bay Area, there's a new building called 1275 Minnesota. And I've done an interesting project for them that will be opening that building, which is also in March. And it's kind of becoming a new cultural center of San Francisco where a lot of the galleries are moving to because of the real estate in San Francisco. So everything's shifting kind of, you know, south. So I'm working at, there's a project I did on ephemeral sculpture. I made photographs from the detritus of the construction site. And so that's another project that you will be able to see come March 2016.
In London, the Comme des Garçons?
Comme des Garçons opens March. Dover Street Market in the Haymarket District.
And Catherine, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.